The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo. If you're working around the clock to build your e-commerce business, you need an e-commerce specific marketing platform that works just as hard as you do. That means you need Klaviyo. With Klaviyo, you'll delight customers and drive revenue at the same time with personalized email and SMS marketing campaigns that you can design and send in minutes without an IT degree. It's by far the most popular email marketing tool in our private community of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners because it's got incredibly advanced and powerful segmentation features that help you make more money. To get started for free and to learn more, check them out at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell by Zipify Apps. You probably know there's three ways to make more money from your store. You can get more traffic, you can increase the size of the orders you get, or you can increase the number of people that convert on your site. You're probably spending time on traffic, almost certainly. You may have spent time with conversion rate optimization, but when's the last time, honestly, you tried to increase that cart size? Well, one-click upsell makes it incredibly easy to offer powerful targeted upsells to your customers. They've generated over $150 million in additional revenue for store owners, just like you. And over 16% of people who get offered an upsell actually take you up on it. It's really powerful. Their entire system is built into Shopify's native checkout, so it's rock solid and secure. And it's built by Ezra Firestone and his team. Ezra, you may know, good friend of mine. He's been in the e-commerce game for a long time. He uses this on his own 8-figure stores. He's in the trenches and he knows it works. So if you want to actually start working on a third of your business that you've been neglecting, increasing that cart size, check him out today at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7-figure-plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. Today on the show, I'm joined by Josh Jong of Gainfluence.com, which is an influencer marketing agency. And Josh is an ex-Dropbox employee who has spent the better part of the last decade in the influencer world, understanding it, helping clients approach it. And what we talk about today is a shift that he argues is really happening, probably already happened in the influencer world, where the primary benefit is not to get exposure. Obviously, you're going to get that, but from a value standpoint, it's hard to scale up a business, and it's hard to really see a lot of value in the influencer marketing approach that I think of when I think of influencer marketing, which is just getting eyeballs in front of my brand. But that there is a much more effective way of leveraging influencers to be able to grow your business. And we talk about that today. It's related to content and getting content that you can use in other parts of your business. So I hope you enjoy it. And let's go ahead and dive right into my deep dive with Josh on influencer marketing in 2021. So Josh, from our conversations that we've had, correct me if I'm wrong, but would you say it's safe to say that the influencer marketing, the traditional model of going out, paying people to get in front of their Instagram accounts is, or you know, their YouTube accounts or mentions, whatever it is pretty much dying, or you know, it's not around anymore for a number of reasons. And you've mentioned like the fact that a lot of different reasons, but would you say that's a fair assessment of influencer marketing, the way at least a lot of people I know and myself included think of influencer marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're someone that knows all the e-commerce brands, obviously. You know, like how many times have you heard from folks that, you know, influencer marketing built our company, right? Like I have such a positive experience working with influencers, right? It's very few in between, right? There are a few companies, a few brands that I know who did really well on influencer marketing. You know, shout out to like Notpot, the CBD gummy brand. They're probably the closest I've seen that kind of built their brand off of influencer marketing. Obviously, they did other channels too, but you know, because of CBD, I think they shied away from Facebook because you can't run CBD ads on Facebook ads. You know, they were probably the closest to doing that. And that was back in like 2018, 2017, when you know, CBD wasn't as crowded of a space as it is today. But you know, for the most part, it's kind of rare, right, that brands, you know, had such a positive experience like paying influencers. I think where the market is moving now is sort of towards, you know, obviously with COVID, a lot of brands, they couldn't just pay a production studio and do photo shoots, right, in person. So I think a lot of brands sort of during COVID, like wisened up and thought, oh, like I could use influencers to create this content, right? They're professional content creators. So you saw the huge shifts in the way content was just being created during this period, right? And I think the other trend that is, you know, I'm sure everyone has been thinking about and been dealing with is the way Facebook ads infrastructure is changing, right? Media buying, the role of a media buyer has shifted so much in the past year. And that was basically mostly due to platform changes, right? So you know, just the importance of like targeting these media buying strategies, like tactics, all these like courses people sell, like how do you do lookalike audiences? How do you build a perfect asset, right? That's kind of all going away, right? If you know the basics of how to set up a campaign, there's not much more you can do to influence your ROAS.
Is that just because, in your opinion, that Facebook is just getting so good at targeting automatically that it can kind of figure it out on its own, and maybe you put it in the right direction and then let it run, but you don't have to get, you know, fine tune it?
100%. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure folks who are actually running these ads, Facebook is automating all of this, right? They're machine learning, they're AI. They're only going to get better and better and better, right? They don't need a human or an agency or a media buying freelancer to go in and, you know, target lookalike audiences for you, right? That's not, you know, that's going to get less and less important. And that's even today, right? That's just not what it takes to win. So what's going to win are the creatives you're running, right? It's going to be one, testing different creatives to find the format that works for you, right? It's not a guessing game. It's not how high quality you may think it is or how great the video you think it is. It's what your audience in real time is responding to, right? I can't tell you the number of times I've seen brands, you know, they pay like $1 million for this amazing ad. They run it and then they go to the parking lot, take a picture of the box, and that box performs better, right? So I'm sure everyone's heard of these stories, right? They call them the parking lot shots, right? That, because you just never know, right? Because what you think is quite quality, that there's no correlation between that and what actually gets people to purchase, right? And what gets people to purchase a lot of times is antithetical to what makes entertaining content, right? You gotta make your value proposition very quickly. You need to capture attention with the value proposition. You need to talk about the problem people are having. You know, so that's very different from creating like an entertaining YouTube video, right? So, or quite the opposite, right? So it's a lot of testing. It's a lot of just figuring out how do I scalably get that value of content and getting people to do the things I tell them to do in the content creative, right? It's not the media buying, and it's not, you know, if you kind of think about what makes a Facebook ad, right? It's three components. Right? I think people, particularly I think media buyers, they overcomplicate this so they can, you know, sell their service better. But it's not that difficult, right? It's three things. It's what's going to determine your Facebook ROAS. It's, you know, on the ad itself, right? It's your copy, the actual headline. It's the creative, and it's your PDP, right? Which is the page that, you know, you take people to when they click on the ad, right? That's it. There's nothing else to it, right? Like what else makes a Facebook ad, right? Those are the three components.
Well, outside of targeting.
Yeah, outside of targeting, exactly, right? So those are the literal physical sort of tangible components of a Facebook ad. So if you just focus on those three things and how to make those things convert and how do you test on these three factors, everything else is kind of noise, right? Relating this back to your question, I think the biggest change is going to be in the influencer marketing space and why the sponsorship is going away is I think people are realizing that this is just a perfect match, right? Like I need to test, I need value, I need quality, and there's nothing else that's really better.
Interesting. So less so about using it for the exposure and more so about using the influencer network to create the creative and be able to create the assets you can then use and plug into the Facebook, Instagram algorithm. What's this mean for creators and influencers? Like it seems like, would you say the golden age for influencers on social media kind of has passed its peak? You know, like it sounds like, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, however many it was, you could, you know, a lot of brands are willing to throw in a lot of cash to be able to just get, you know, cash for just posts. Sounds like that ship has sailed or is sailing. So have we passed the golden age for, you know, influencers in social media, and are they having to work a lot harder for, you know, for their job?
Yeah, great question. So I think, you know, it depends on, we're, you know, getting specific here on exactly what influencer marketing is. So, and what platforms they're on, right? So in terms of getting brand deals for on the influencer side, hey, send me your products. I'll post about you. I'll sponsor post for $10,000. Like I said, that's going away, right? And it's probably not coming back anytime soon. I mean, unless, you know, like the top tier, top tier creators, they're always going to get brand deals. Like Kim Kardashian is not, you know, she's not starving of brand deals, right? But so I think there are a lot of factors here, a lot of nuances involved. But for the most part, yeah, that part of the industry is kind of dying out on Instagram. And I'll say YouTube as well, you know, in terms of not just with e-commerce, you know, even like mobile gaming, right? Like mobile apps used to sponsor a ton of YouTubers. And now that you don't really see that much of it anymore. When you're watching YouTube videos, you know, I'm sure any of your audience watches a lot of YouTube. I'm sure you've seen a decrease in the amount of like organic shout outs that you see in the videos. But I would say that's one piece. But in terms of, you know, like on YouTube, for example, with AdSense, right? Like YouTube ads and YouTube paying out creators for running pre-roll ads on their videos, you know, that hasn't really gone away. A lot of creators I know are still making, you know, six, some even seven figures a month just on the AdSense. There's some debate on, you know, whether or not YouTube is cracking down too hard on certain content creators. But for the most part, that hasn't really changed too much. I guess those are those two platforms. I would say, yeah, sponsorships are dying out. On Instagram, you know, like I think we chatted about this last time, you know, Instagram, you know, like where people are going now for, you know, for revenue is OnlyFans, right? If people know about OnlyFans, that's, you know, because people are just making a ridiculous amount of money there. Obviously, there's a huge creator distribution between the top people and the bottom people, but you know, you're more likely to make cash on OnlyFans now than Instagram if you're a certain type of creator, right?
Yeah, and just to interject there, you kind of alluded to our previous conversation. We were talking earlier. You'd mentioned, you know, OnlyFans, and a little sheltered Andrew here hadn't heard about it. So I'll link up in the show notes to a New York Times article that kind of talks about OnlyFans. But safe to say that it is a subscription based content consumption platform, and it definitely leans towards kind of the more provocative / like pornographic. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I would say that model in general is doing pretty well. So I'm sure people know about Patreon, right? So a lot of creators, a lot of talent, YouTubers that I used to manage who are in the, you know, 10 million plus subscriber count on YouTube, they're making more money on Patreon than YouTube, you know, just because, you know, YouTube has a lot of rules against what you can say, and they're cracking down certain content creators because of what their views are. So they're making more money on Patreon from their fans, right? Than what YouTube AdSense might be paying them. And on top of that, just like I said earlier, you know, brand deals on YouTube are going away, you know? So, you know, brand paying the $10,000 for you to shout out my product for 30 seconds in front of your video organically, you know, those are getting less and less available for these creators. So they're looking at other channels to sort of monetize their content, their personality.
Interesting. So kind of going back to the OnlyFans thing, I mean, you had mentioned last time that it was a really big, there was a ton of people leaving Instagram for that. To play devil's advocate a little bit, like I can see that, you know, especially if you're in, you know, in the beauty space or the fashion space or the clothing space, you have a certain subset of those influencers that are like, hey, you know, I can maybe go over here, maybe we can get slightly more risque, make a lot more money, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems like even of that subsegment, a good portion of them wouldn't be willing to do that. And that is only a subsegment of, you know, of all influencers. Well, maybe this is a question, like I have no idea what percentage of influencers are, you know, are women or men that are willing to do that, I guess. But is it really, I guess, and obviously this is someone coming from it that's completely ignorant, doesn't have the background, but it surprises me that there'd be that platform and that kind of sub niche would have such a dramatic impact on the broader influencer marketing just arena.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. Just to be clear, I wouldn't say they're leaving Instagram for OnlyFans. They're still on Instagram creating content. And a lot of these creators are using Instagram as a lead gen channel for the OnlyFans. So they're driving their fans from Instagram to OnlyFans. You know, I'm sure people have seen Instagram handles where their OnlyFans link is on like a Linktree link or straight up on their bio, right? And Instagram, I don't think have cracked down on that. But so they kind of work in pair. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know what the exact percentage is of like Instagram influencers who are on OnlyFans, but I mean, folks can look at, you know, OnlyFans like revenue numbers or like it's mind blowing, just how much money that company is making. You know, in terms of the how it's affected the influencer marketing market as a whole, I would say, at least on YouTube, in the past few years, you have a lot of creators who are complaining about YouTube's terms of service, right? So they were, you know, like, hey, YouTube is cracking down on, you know, my content. They're demonetizing my channel. They're not pushing my video out to people. And you kind of hear that less and less now in terms of at least of the female, like sort of beauty fashion creators of that niche. They're making enough money. Some of them are making enough money on OnlyFans that they're not like eating off of like their, you know, YouTube AdSense, or they're not waiting on their next brand deal to come, you know? So I think there's just more competition in this space, which I think is a good thing for the creators. You don't have to depend on one platform.
Interesting. What are some of the other platforms that are giving creators more control? Because obviously if you're influencer marketing, you're using it to be able to monetize your audience in a way that maybe that platform, i.e. Instagram, doesn't natively allow you to do. So you can make money from that. What are some of the other interesting new platforms that are letting you, you know, you mentioned Patreon, OnlyFans. Are there any others where creatives and creators are going to be able to, you know, where they have more control over their audience, ways that they can make money without having to necessarily partner with other brands?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is in the YouTube space. That's kind of what I know the most. If you look at, I'm sure people have heard of like Logan Paul or Jake Paul, these kind of people, the majority of their revenue comes from merch sales, right? So they set up a store on Teespring or one of these platforms. I think that in the case of those two people I mentioned, I think they're on this platform called FanJoy, which is like a Teespring competitor. That's 80, 90% of their sales is selling their own products, selling their own merchandise. Now, that game is incredibly hard to win at. You're looking at, you know, out of all of the creators on YouTube, you know, you're looking at the top 1%, maybe even less percentage of folks who are really, you know, raking in the dough on like merchandise sales. But when it works, it, you know, works really well. You know, on the Instagram side, you know, I'm not sure if folks have seen this article that came out, I think a few months ago, of this like Instagram, TikTok influencer who had like millions of followers, but only sold like 10 t-shirts that she launched. So it's a very difficult game. So it's just monetizing, you know, in general, right? On these social media platforms, it's not easy to monetize your audience. It's a small percentage of people who actually have that pool to be able to get people to pay you. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, outside of Patreon and OnlyFans, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of the big tech giants, right? It's, you know, there isn't too much competition in this space outside of, I think it's getting more and more as these platforms kind of pop up, you know, outside of Patreon and OnlyFans. I think those are the two major competitors, or you can sell your own merch or your own products, but that's super hard to do. And very few people succeed at that. And yeah, you know, monetizing your content is for a very small percentage of creators. And not only do you have to have a big audience, but you also actually need the pool, right? And you also have to be in the right niche. You know, if I'm like someone that, you know, I'm just thinking of a niche that's not monetizable, right? If I'm like a tech, tech review does make a lot of money, but if I'm like an artist, right? And I paint, you know, and these channels are really hard to make money from, you know, versus like a fashion channel, or like I was looking at this other influencer a few days ago. She's like a leggings review channel. Right. I didn't even know that existed, but she makes 7 figures a year, and she only has like 200,000 followers. So the niche is also very important. But yeah, when we're talking about monetizing our content, just a pretext, it's a very small percentage of people who can actually do that on any platform.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, you know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. So what would you recommend if somebody's got an e-commerce store and they've got, you know, let's say they've got, you know, $50,000 this year to spend and budgeted towards influencer marketing? The model has shifted. It's less more pay to play and more so potentially giving product. There's also, you know, potentially, you know, influencers and creators going to other platforms. What would you, I have to ask you to do this kind of niche agnostically, but how would you approach trying to put $50,000 to good productive use in 2021, given all the dynamics you just mentioned? What would be your strategy? Obviously, you're not cutting big checks for stuff, but what would be your strategy if that was your goal?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think before you even talk about that, I would say, you know, your goal as a brand is to find scalable growth channels, right? So I think there's a lot of talk on Twitter and Instagram on, hey, like I sell t-shirts and, you know, I found this TikTok influencer and she sold, you know, $10,000 worth of products, right? That's great. I see a lot of these posts. I don't know if they're real or not, but let's just assume they're, you know, they're real, right? My answer to that is so what, right? You found one influencer that sold a decent amount of products. You can't really repeat that strategy over and over and over again, right? And the number you threw out was 50K, right? So at 50K, you know, if you can allocate 50K to influencer marketing, your brand is probably at a stage where having those one-off successes is not going to make or break you, right? You're not just starting out. You know, you've done a decent amount of work already. So I think the focus is what channel can I find to scale, right? You know, for most brands, like you said, you know, I don't have, you know, too much other information about this in this particular example, but, you know, for most brands, it's kind of the traditional channels, right? It's, you know, Facebook ads, Instagram ads, or even TikTok ads, right? Which is pretty hot right now. Or YouTube ads. I've seen some brands work on that as well. So I would think, how can I find that channel to continue to scale? And I would say with 50K, you know, I would start testing getting really high quality content at scale for your ads, right? So if it's paid ads and you're seeing some success on that, which, you know, you want to think about, how do I increase what's already working, right? So the way you succeed on any platforms with paid ads is to test creatives, right? That's by far the number one thing you can do to see higher ROAS or higher ROI on any of these platforms. So I would think about getting high quality content at scale with different people and testing different ads every single day to see what's performing. And there's just no better way to do that than with influencers, right? You can't test at scale by paying a production company seven figures, you know, to get ads. It's hard to do on the quality side. You can't really do that with customers, right? Which is what a lot of brands do. So influencers, the right way to do influencers, really, it's not influencer marketing. It's not betting that this person, you know, you hit the lottery and this person drives, you know, a decent amount of sales. It's figure out what's already working on paid ads and using influencers to create the content that you need to test and succeed on these ads.
Have you seen many e-commerce companies have a lot of success with TikTok? Because I'm a little biased here just from the subset I see in our community, our private community of store owners. And maybe people are seeing a lot of success there, just being quiet about it, which, you know, maybe makes sense. But yeah, I also wonder too, if it's kind of like the whole Snapchat thing or, you know, where it pops up, it's trendy, it's interesting. People think it's going to be the next Instagram or Facebook. And so they start investing heavily in, which, you know, could be a good bet, but it doesn't pay off. Are you actually seeing e-commerce brands be able to build? Are you seeing any kind of returns from e-commerce brands that are having success on TikTok, or is it pretty few and far between?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is it's hard to tell, right? There's a certain, you know, I'm sure like people go on Twitter, they go on LinkedIn, they see brands posting about their success on TikTok. It's hard to say how much they actually made. And also, again, is it scalable, right? I think that's a big thing is succeeding with a handful of influencers on a few sales and a few campaigns. It doesn't, especially at this stage of your audience, right? It's the seven figures above. It doesn't really matter for you. It's not really worth your time and attention to really focus on that, right? What folks should think about more is this a scalable channel? And I haven't seen that. There were brands who were built off of Facebook ads. There were brands built off of Instagram. I haven't heard of any brands who were built off of TikTok and like, that's all they do. I think it's a great platform for getting content creatives. So taking advantage of the trends I mentioned earlier, but then you take that and you reuse the content like Facebook ads, right? That is a pretty good strategy. I've been seeing some success on that just because of the high bar of the quality of the content people do on TikTok versus like, you know, YouTube, for example. But I would just, you know, be careful when, you know, folks see a brand bragging about their ROI on like one TikTok sponsorship with an influencer. It's too early to tell right now. You know, TikTok ads is kind of a hit or miss. You know, it's gotten much better, like I said. And I've seen a few like fintech startups do really well in there. So Tally, I know for sure did pretty well in there. But again, I also don't know how scalable that is for them. And yeah, if you have the budget, the manpower, you know, test it. But it's not something I would put a lot of time thinking about.
Are there any networks or places that people should be thinking about exploring more, maybe underutilized or fairly inexpensive platforms for influencer marketing, either to get in front of people or to be able to create great creative? So I'll throw out a handful. Facebook, I don't even know if that was ever really a major influencer platform. Clubhouse, Pinterest, Twitch, any others that are kind of like, hey, you should, you know, obviously it's going to be, in the case of Twitch, for example, niche specific with gaming and things, but any platforms that you think like have more promise than maybe people understand?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a balance, right, between, and TikTok falls into this camp, which is Twitch, TikTok, these kind of platforms, definitely more underutilized, especially for e-commerce brands, because nobody's really running on those. You'll probably see a few wins quickly versus like Facebook ads, for example, right? Like, you know, on TikTok and Twitch, you know, if you sponsor five people, two of them might actually drive you, you know, like a ROI positive campaign within the first five. And that's just because of attention thing, right? Like people, you know, who are buying products or people who are e-commerce brands who are sponsoring influencers, they're not as busy on these platforms. But again, scalability, right? They're almost kind of inversely correlated. You know, you can get a few quick wins, but you know, if you're spending $50K on influencer marketing and you're seven figures, it doesn't really matter, right? You can, if you have like one or two or three wins on a few campaigns. Again, I'd like to use these platforms to get content creatives, but it's not. I haven't really seen anyone like scale and build businesses off of those, especially on, you know, on Twitch. If you're e-commerce, it doesn't make too much sense. The one company that I saw that was somewhat successful on Twitch, for example, was like G Fuel. If you guys know what that is, the gaming energy drink. They did a few influencer sponsorships and a few gaming sponsorships back in the day. I haven't really seen their ads on Twitch as of late, but yeah, you do have, you know, if you're like in the gaming space, you know, and it's an energy drink made for gamers, it makes sense to, you know, if you're not in that niche, it's going to be hard for you to scale.
And then, of course, your agency is called Gainfluence.com. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but you guys really focus on helping, not using influencer marketing in the traditional sense of just getting in front of eyeballs, but leveraging influencers to be able to create, like you mentioned earlier, great creative photographies, you know, photography, video, things like that for your products. And then potentially you'll get the posts as well, but kind of that's more considered kind of gravy on top. It's a bonus. The primary reason is to drive the creative. So can you talk just a little bit about how you guys do that and how you help stores with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So sort of going back to your question about like the platforms, right? I think the main difference is, you know, the problem brands have is not necessarily like finding influencers. Again, you can just hire someone, an intern to, you know, just DM influencers all day. It would be much cheaper than using a platform or like a talent agency or something like that. The problem brands have is they're not getting the ROI they need on Facebook, right? Like there's so many problems with Facebook ads, accounts getting shut down because you're using the wrong creative. There are problems with, you know, just like high CPMs. I'm not getting the results I need, sort of thing. I'm burning money on this. those are kind of the things I hear from brands. So the main thing is, you know, like one is what kind of content formats should I be testing? What kind of content should I be using? And how can I get that content? How do I actually execute, right? How do I actually get that content? Because you can know what roughly what works, but you know, if you're paying production companies like 7-8 figures to get ads, or you're getting content from your customers and they're not doing what you want them to do, then you know, you're not really getting what you want, right? So the way we look at influencers is these are the perfect people to get you the content that you need to succeed on Facebook ads. So it's one is scalable in terms of content creatives, right? So you can get, you know, if you have the bandwidth, you can get like 100 videos. You shouldn't do that. That's way too many for like 1 month, but you can get as many as you want. You know, if you have a good brand and a good product, you can get a lot, like a high value of content, right? To test. And secondly, these are already sort of trained. If you want to think about them as like trained content creators, so this is not like a model that like a production studio hired to shoot stuff. This is what they do every single day, right? And there's like incentive for them to create great content for you because they're also posting that on their account, right? So, and they want to look good to their audience. So there's a huge alignment in incentives. They're great content creators. It's scalable. You can get high values from them. And it's just kind of that perfect solution to the problem most brands are having, which is how do I get that ROAS on Facebook ads? It's not necessarily the logistics, which could be a problem. It's time consuming, obviously, but you'll figure that out, right? The real problem is what do I need to run to make money on Facebook?
Great. Well, gainfluence.com. So gain, the word gate, and then influence kind of meshed in there with it. Check them out if you're looking for some better content to be able to test on your Facebook ads. Well, thank you for diving in on all this, all the insights and thoughts on influencer marketing. Again, gainfluence.com if you're looking to up your game and get some fresh, ongoing, really high quality creative that you can use to really dial in and increase the effectiveness of your Facebook ads. So Josh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably someone interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torrecampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.